We're going to go ahead and get started with our next session, the credentialing session. On our panel today is Maylene Christopher. Maylene is the Manager of Delegation Relations at United Healthcare. She is responsible for and led the expansion to build out the ICE credentialing team for the Mid-Atlantic, and has been a co-lead for that team for some time now. We appreciate all the effort and work that Maylene does for our credentialing team. Next, we have Cynthia Minnick. Cynthia is the National Account Manager of the Delegation Relations Department for United Healthcare. She assesses the credentialing oversight activities United's delegated entities, annually reviews NCQA standards, makes appropriate updates for the assessment tools within United, as well as participate in United's credentialing policy work group. She is the co-lead for the Mid-Atlantic region for the past 3 years and has been involved with ICE for the past 5 years. Again, appreciate all of Cynthia's work. And we have Suki Ewers. She is the ICE credentialing policy team co-leader. Suki is a credentialing lead analyst in compliance and accreditation for Cigna Healthcare. And Suki participates on several ICE teams, and she's been a co-team lead for California ICE credentialing policy team since April of 2017, a co-lead for the Northwest ICE credentialing policy team since September of 2015, and previously served as ICE co-team lead for the ICE clarification work group from 2008 to 2012. So these ladies have been with the organization for some time and have done just a tremendous job expanding this shared credentialing policy team across the country. And we're very excited about the upcoming work that we'll possibly be undertaking in the Southwestern region. So with that, I'll bring on our panel.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. Ah, the clicker. So I'm going to be that person and ask if some of you might want to move forward so we can actually see you, potentially interact. We promise not to bite or anything like that. And I have a couple of questions in case anyone wants to move forward. Could you tell me how many of you are with provider organizations and maybe do delegated credentialing on behalf of the health plans? Could you just raise your hands? Okay, a few of you. How many of you are with MSOs? Several. Mm-hmm. Health plan auditors? And all others? Just here because we're having a session, you want to know what we do, right? Okay, well, thank you for joining us today. I am going to pass it to Cindy, but wanted to just get some intros.
Hi, everybody. How are you guys doing today? Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. So here is our agenda. The first section we're going to go through is some definitions, the 2020 NCQA updates and changes, the 2020 ICE credentialing audit tool, audit process, and training tool, educational reminders, review of the standards, and then there's acronyms sitting at the back of the presentation for you. So the first item is the definitions. We have annual audit, delegation, and documented process. So an annual audit is a health plan must conduct the audit at least every 12 months. There is a 2-month grace period, so it is allowed for 14 months. Delegation is a formal process by which the organization gives another entity the authority to perform certain functions on its behalf. In this case, we're talking about credentialing. Documented process, which are policies and procedures, flow charts, and other methodologies used to describe their credentialing process. Next slide is starting the NCQA 2020 updates. So NCQA has changed the way that they score health plans during their audits. So there used to be a wide range between 100% down to 0% on the scoring. They've now changed it to met, partially met, or not met. And this is specifically for NCQA when they are auditing health plans. The ICE auditors will be reviewing the evidence and indicating whether it was compliant or not on the audit, and each health plan will take those scores and put them into their own thresholds. Continuing on to the updates, CR1 Element C, which is Credentialing Systems Controls. This is a whole new element by NCQA for 2020. This applies to both the paper and electronics. Factor one is how primary source verification is received, reviewed, tracked, dated, and stored. So your policies and procedures want to specify those four elements. Factor two is how modified information is tracked and dated from its initial verification. Factor three is who is the staff that's authorized to review, modify, delete information, and the circumstances where modifications or deletion is appropriate. Factor four is the security and controls in place to protect the information from unauthorized modifications. That policy specifically, you'll probably find a lot of the information that you need in your IT policy. That can range from passwords. How are those security controls put into place so nobody can get into it? Well, number one, you have to log into your computer. Once you log into your computer, you have to use a password. To get into maybe your credentialing database, what do you have to do? You have to log in with the password. So, and you have to change them frequently. So that element would basically cover those. Factor five is how the organization audits the process and procedures in those factors one through four.
Can I interrupt? Mm-hmm. I just want to add a note in here because ICE has sent a note out to all of those who are registered via the ICE website to participate with the credentialing collaboratives. And there is a document we have put out in our approved tools folder that talks more about the standard and the requirements. We've also had to answer a number of questions for why is it that you plan to start auditing this new requirement on January the 1st of 2020? Because the standards, if you read your NCQA standards at the bottom of the page, it says that they are effective for audits conducted after July 1st of 2020. It used to be that we waited until July to institute anything new. But when NCQA audits the health plans, if that plan is audited on July 1st or after, they're assessed against this standard, and the look back is going to be a minimum of 6 months. So when NCQA releases their new standards in July of 1 year for the following year, they do expect us to have them implemented within 6 months. So that is something that we will be looking for with our January 1st tools.
Okay, so moving on to the NCQA 2020 updates regarding CR3 malpractice insurance. So they added it to the standards that future malpractice coverage date is acceptable with the effective date and the expiration dates. So if a provider lists the future effective date on their application, that is acceptable. The malpractice insurance coverage may also be in the face sheet or a federal tort letter. It must also include the insurance effective date and expiration date. Clarification on appropriate documentation. So these are some of the things that NCQA wanted to clarify with a little bit more detailed of information. So if the verification is from a report, then NCQA uses the date generated by the source when the information is retrieved. If the source does not generate a date, then NCQA will use the date noted by the organization's staff who verified the credentials. The individual who verified the credentials must also initial and date. The use of web crawlers. So if the organization may use web crawlers to verify credentialing information from approved sources. We all know that's really big right now. Everybody's going to web crawlers to help ease the credentialing process. So they wanted to put that in there. The organization shows evidence that the web crawler collects information only from approved sources. Correct and completeness of the application. CAQH. NCQA accepts the last attestation date generated by the system as the dates when the practitioner signed and dated the application. This has been in place for a very long time. NCQA just added the language to make sure it was in the standards. As you see, there's two pictures down there that shows you where that's of the CAQH application, and it shows you what those two dates are. So you don't necessarily have to receive the signed updated attestation page. You can use these dates. Practitioner office site quality. They added to A1 the accessibility to equipment. So the standards and thresholds for providing accessible equipment for members with physical or mental disabilities. And then this would include scales and exam tables and equipment for treatment and diagnoses. CR8, element A, factor 1, mutually agreed upon delegation agreement. So NCQA considers the effective date signed in the delegation agreement as the mutually agreed upon effective date. NCQA may accept the other evidence for the effective date of the mutually upon effective date. There we go. Okay, and I'm going to pass it along to Mei-Ling.
So next, I want to talk about, so Cindy's shared with us the NCQA updates and changes for 2020. I want to go into talking a little bit about what we've done to our ICE credentialing tools, our audit process, and our training tools, and the things that you'll see different in those. So first, as a result of NCQA's scoring changes, those of you who are used to either conducting audits with ICE, the ICE tool, or you are being audited with the ICE tool, you should recall that for the different standards and elements, ICE's tool followed the NCQA scoring. So as an example, in CR1, if you received 8 out of 11 of the elements compliant for element A, you were given full credit, 100%. And don't quote me, but I think it then you drop down to 70% if you got 7 to 10, and so forth. With NCQA changing the standards and how they're auditing the health plans, as she said, it's met, partially met, or not met. And there are some elements that if you're being audited for a health plan and you fail and you're not met on that element, it's a structural element, and it means you don't pass your accreditation. Being that the health plans are delegating credentialing to you, it will be up to each health plan to determine how they take the ICE audit and score you. That's currently going on today in that one company may have a requirement that's a critical element that another company may not. As an example, the Medicare opt-out query. For United Healthcare, that's a critical element. And so if you fail that one, we would put you on an improvement action plan. But another company, Aetna, for instance, may not have that as a critical element. As we move forward, though, we're no longer going to, on the tool, reflect 100% or 80% or whatever it is. We will be collecting the information, reporting that out for the payers. They will then plug those numbers into their own tools to come up with the scores for you. So because of those changes, we actually took the ICE Mid-Atlantic audit tool and we basically mirrored it for California and for ICE Northwest. And if you're an auditor and you haven't seen it yet, we've got a few screenshots, but we think once you get used to it, it's a much simpler tool to use. So we did make that change. So here's a screenshot. It looks a little bit like the current audit tool. This is just the top of the screen where you fill out your provider data, your health plan data. We did flip it because in today's current ICE tool, the health plan information is what's filled out first. But we felt it was the provider's information that was more important since that's who we're conducting the audit of. So you can see then down at the bottom of the screen some different colored arrows I put in there. So just to make sure that you see and note, there are still multiple tabs within the Excel document of the audit tool. Also, all of the elements that are in yellow need to either be filled in and populated, or you need to go to that screen and hit the space bar or the delete bar to remove the yellow. Going on then, at the top of the tool, you'll see in red there, I've got a green arrow next to it, that if you're marking an element not applicable, you need to make sure you add comments as to why. And the comment screen you can see, or the comments field, is on the far right. What you'll also notice with this tool is we no longer will have one tab for documentation that has to all be pulled over to the first tab for scoring. Today, currently, if an auditor finds a deficiency in the documentation in your policies, they have to note it on the documentation tab, then they have to repeat that on the first tab, which is the main tool of the ICE 2019 audit tool. So it will all be together on one screen. What will be important is that as you're going through it and you're noting where you found policies and procedures, you want to make sure you note the name of the policy, the page number, and the section that you found it in. That's very important so that, as for instance, if there is a deficiency, it's able for the group to identify where you found it. Perhaps you were looking on page 7 and the answer was really on page 10 and they need to help you find it. But please make sure you're getting that information in there. And then comments are only necessary if there's a deficiency or, like I said, if there's a not applicable field. Another thing, you see the circle in the middle of the screen there. In Excel, you may know, and you see the little red triangle in the corner there, and I wasn't able to get it on a screenshot, but when you hover your mouse over that little red spot, it's a comment. And so all of the details that are currently in the ICE tool on the documentation tab are documented in those comments. So you still have to score the same. An example would be the non-discrimination language. If you're familiar with our current ICE tool, you'll remember there's, I forget, like 5 different lines and rows that you have to repeatedly note where in the policy you found it and what was there. We're not scoring that differently. It's still 1 point. It's compliant or not, but the details of what you should be looking for are in those little red diamonds in the comment screen, so you'll want to be looking for those. So other updates about the process, as we said, the auditors will be reviewing for compliance or not. They will note in the comments what they found if something is not compliant. And then each health plan takes that. And to tell you the truth, many of the health plans already currently take the ICE audit tool, take the data, and feed it into their own tools to come up with the scores. Another note for organizational providers, and unfortunately I can't show you the entire tool, but in the ICE audit tool now we do have a tab to do your organizational provider scoring. You don't have to use that tab, but it's there as an option for you. One change that we made, though, in the audit process is we will now be only looking at 10 credential and 10 recredentialing files for the organizational provider portion. So if you happen to send a spreadsheet, you can use the spreadsheet that is on ICE, and I think it's, not the next slide, so I'm going to go back. But we do have one on the ICE website where you can document. You don't have to have a hard copy file for organizational providers if you're documenting it all on the spreadsheet, and we can take that either way. So that's just another picture of the screen. You can see, though, that I have filled in some of the information so you can see what you should be expecting. got the name of the policy number, the page number, and the section where you found the information. And then on the next row, you see we marked it non-compliant, and you see that I've added notes. So that's what the screen and what the tool should look like when you have populated it, just to give you an idea. Then you don't have to copy that information onto another tab. It's already there where we want it. Then the second tab or third tab of the new audit tool is where all the scores are brought together. So you can see here in the green for CR1 policy and procedure, you see there's one point there. That is from where I just showed you on the previous screen that one was marked compliant. And then to the far right of the screen, you can see that the points received and the points possible populate there. So this shows 1 of 18. It's because I didn't finish populating the tool. But that's where you would see how many of the actual elements were marked compliant. Now, the scoring section at the top there is simply related to NCQA elements. So you want to keep that in mind. The lower section then, as it goes on down vertically in yellow, is where you would find the scores that are carried over for your CMS elements, DMHC, DHCS, who did I miss? TRICARE, and any others that are not NCQA elements are carried over to this tab. Going on, here's the picture of the organizational provider spreadsheet. This is the one that's available on the ICE website as a tool for you to use, and many of our organizations do use this and populate this to provide their verification information to us for the facility providers. So if you haven't seen it, there is an example of it there. Going on, for recredentialing cycle length, this is not something new that we're doing, but it's something we want to reemphasize. When we audit for CR4 versus when NCQA audits for us, we look at the last 12 months of the provider roster. Those providers who were credentialed and recredentialed in the last 12 months since we last assessed you. NCQA is changing how they're doing CR4 for health plan auditing going forward. They will now be looking at your entire roster, including files that should have been recredentialed and were not. So those that are out of compliance are subject to review. We've personally spoken with NCQA, and so as an example, let's say Dr. Christopher comes up for review. They happen to pull that file for a survey. If that file was supposed to be processed, let's say in May of 2019, and it didn't get processed until 2020, they will look in, they won't throw that file out any longer. They will look into the file to verify there's the validation that you did your outreach or that the provider was on sabbatical or whatever it might be. They will validate that you sent reminders for the recredentialing for that provider who simply didn't return their information. They want to know, was the provider eventually terminated? So they will be doing that kind of a validation. ICE is not doing that as part of our oversight of our provider groups, but instead, we do want, when you send us the roster for an annual audit, we want the entire roster. We will only pull files from those processed in the last 12 months, but if we find, as an example, that 10 out of 300 of your total providers are past a 36-month recred cycle, we will note that on the audit tools. And then it's up to each health plan. So it won't be scored down under CR4 because it's not a file that was processed, but it would be up to each health plan to assess that. So I want to make sure you're aware of that. And if you happen to realize you have that problem, we've seen it a lot in the last year and a half where a longtime employee or even credentialing manager leaves the department and leadership finds out there was a problem they didn't know about. The most important thing at that point is to make your health plans aware of it, put a corrective action plan in place, and get those files processed. So. Next is the training tool. So those of you who are familiar with our process know that we have a lengthy Word document called our ICE training tool that goes through all of the standards. And if you're a provider group and maybe don't have a copy of the NCQA standards, our training tool has the majority of the information in it that you need. If you're needing to try to update policies or write policies, understand how you're being audited, the ICE training tool has that information in there. So that tool's been around for a number of years now. And like our ICE audit tool in Excel, it has been a while since it's had a major update. So we did quite a bit of updating, especially in the front matter of the training tool this year. Originally, our actual audit tool was done in a Word document, and of course, we've all kind of progressed in technology since then. So we have updated the training tool. We've added some introduction at the beginning. We have a lot of new blood in the industry that's in the credentialing realm. We're seeing a lot of you hire new people who maybe don't know ICE and maybe don't know credentialing. And so we've added some introductory material. We've added definitions and explained the audit process so that if a new person is coming in, maybe a new employee of yours is coming in and they have to handle the process with the health plan that year and they don't know what's coming, this is a good tool and a good place to refer to them. It's already been approved. It's sitting in Patty's email waiting to be distributed next week and added to the ICE website. So it is available and ready for you shortly. So just a few educational reminders. Is that for me?
Yeah. I need you to lose your nipples when you have a chance.
Gotcha.
Okay. So some ongoing monitoring things. These are just some reminders. We get a lot of questions throughout the year. So on policy elements for ongoing monitoring, you should be assessing for Medicare and Medicaid sanctions. Sanctions or limitations on license, those are to be monitored on a monthly basis. And then for complaints and adverse events, those are to be monitored every 6 months. So you want to make sure that you're doing that, that you're documenting that for your surveys, and you have the evidence to be able to provide. The evidence might be ongoing monitoring logs. Again, on the ICE website, we have a very simple Excel log out there that you can use to document those. I remember years ago, we used to go do most of the audits on site, and we would come into your offices, and you'd have bookshelves full of binders with all the pages you had printed out from every different medical board in California that we had to review. You can put it all on a log now, folks, so it's much easier. Then you can send it to us to do a desktop audit. You might keep those on other spreadsheets or tracking tools. It may be in your committee minutes, but you do need to have the evidence of that. Can I move this? Then for your credentialing committee, your policy should describe your medical director or other physician who is responsible and who participates in your credentialing process. That sounds pretty simple, but we still see policies that don't include it. So it is necessary. Also, we get so many questions now regarding your credentialing committee meetings. Can they be virtual? Yes, they can be virtual, but they can't be strictly by email. You can do WebEx, you can do conference call, you can do in person, but you can't do it just via email, okay? So remember, it's a peer review process, so we have to be meeting together to discuss, unless the files are going through a clean file process. The only exception to that is that the medical director can sign off on the clean files. Then CR3, element A, factor one, for the license, the organization has to verify the medical license via the state medical license agency, whether that's online or an authorized agent of the state, such as the nursing board uses the nurse's website to verify. And then factor five, for review of work history, you have to make sure that you're looking at the last 5 years of work history and the gaps. And if a gap is more than 6 months, it's got to be explained. If it's more than a year, the physician has to explain it in writing. So before we do the polling questions, I think we've got plenty of time. I wanted to give you an opportunity to ask questions. We usually have a lot of questions in this session, so please feel free. For a pre-delegation audit, one, do you have to go on site? Two, can you use an ICE audit? So we had a discussion at our lunch table about credentialing and other things and regulations and how great it is when you have friends and coworkers who can say, did you know you have to do it this way? Or you have to do it that way? And I love it when you can say, no, you have to do it according to the standards. So according to the NCQA standards, you do not have to go on site, nor actually do you have to do a file review. You have to do an assessment of the organization you're going to delegate to. So your organization may make a decision to do on site or to do file review. In California, we don't generally share or we don't conduct a pre-delegation audit. If there's a new entity and everyone's wanting to delegate to them, generally we all still audit them. But if the provider organization who you're wanting to pre-assess agrees and signs the pre-posting letter giving authority to the prior health plan to give you the report, then you can gain that access. You're welcome. Yes, in the back. So let me restate it, and I may not have understood. So if I delegate credentialing to you, you're asking, does your roster, when you give it to me, have to go through my medical director? Yes. So another great question, what does the standard really say? So NCQA does not require, when a delegate provides their list of new providers to the health plan is not required to vote on those providers or even to review the list via like a medical director or a credentialing committee. Does that answer your question? Yeah, there's not a requirement for that. Many health plans do that, but we're delegating decision-making usually to the provider organization, and many health plans then choose that. They may just take a list through as more of an informational.
My name is Emily. I'm from Chinese Community Healthcare Association. I just want to know about evidence base. When you say that spreadsheet is on the website, I haven't had the chance to check on it. But with evidence for monitoring adverse events, what kind of evidence are you looking for? Can it be just a spreadsheet of the members or provider and what had happened? How do we address it? And is that what you're... what the auditor is looking for?
Good question. So, yeah, the spreadsheets that is on the website is primarily designed at the ongoing monitoring of sanctions, so your OIG, your state medical license, those types of things. For the actual complaints or adverse events, generally, we may see those in minutes. A lot of times that happens in a quality department, and so evidence is provided. You can do a spreadsheet showing, you know, that you have tracked and trended for your providers as well. We're not looking to see the evidence of the member. We don't want to see the protected health information. That can all be blocked out as well. Does anyone have any questions, though, having walked through that? Anything come up in your mind that you'd like to ask?
Lisa Ryan, Podiatry Plan. I have a question about the signature on the checklist. We're migrating our system to Salesforce, and everything is electronically checked off, dated, scanned, no paper documents. Is an electronic signatures from the committee members from in the compliance committee and the credentialing committee acceptable, or does it need to be an actual wet signature?
Of the committee itself?
It could, yes,
it can be electronic as long as you have things in place to ensure that only I can sign it or you could sign it, so that I just couldn't go in and sign someone else's name. It's the same as with your credentialing coordinator or specialist. They can go in and enter their identification information, and so that's acceptable to be in there as well, as long as someone else couldn't go in and randomly add it.